Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, The Rich and the Ruthless premieres, and am I living in a soap twilight zone? Stay tuned. Jillian Bowe, welcome.
Hello.
Mike Jubinville, welcome.
Hi.
And Jamie Giddens, welcome and congratulations. The Rich and the Ruthless has premiered.
Thank you. Hello.
Well, now that it's out in the world, do you feel like your baby has like graduated and is off to college and you're having like parental like withdrawals?
No, I don't feel like that. I feel really grateful and happy, actually, because this has been, you know, almost a 10-year journey of writing with Victoria Rowell, helping to shepherd her vision all the way back from the book to now, just trying to get it, because we knew that this is a story that, you know, if it could get out there, that people would find funny, that they would find relatable, and in a lot of ways cathartic, given Vicky's many, many years in soaps, on The Young and the Restless and other shows. It's so great to see the narrative that we created there, you know, that Urban Movie Channel, Bob Johnson's company, agreed not only to license it as an exclusive series, but to use it to launch their new Fallout Fridays comedy block. I mean, that is like, you know, it's like, wow, we're like the center of their TGIF. And to see them, you know, put forth so much promotional effort. I mean, yeah, I have chills, like seeing something that I co-wrote being mentioned in the Washington Post and the New York Times and Ebony and Essence and all of these places. I mean, it, you know, for the little boy who grew up in a town with 2,000 people and 10,000 cows, I mean, it's pretty awesome this week to see, you know, my first television writing effort on TV, you know, and that's the thing. It can be watched on people's TVs because, you know, if you have, you know, a Roku or Amazon Video or Apple TV, Urban Movie Channel has hubs on all of those. And Urban Movie Channel is offering a free code. So write this down, RR on UMC. If you want to tune in and watch the first episode, and, you know, there's two strategies, obviously, with streaming shows. There's the binge, and then there's, you know, the traditional, you know, kind of stretching it out. So Urban Movie Channel chose to air our show over the course of six episodes over the course of 6 weeks, as opposed to putting them all up at once. So you'll have to come back every Friday for the next 5 weeks to find out what happens with Callista and Kitty and Augustus and all of their motley crew of soapalicious friends and foes.
I do declare, you're a bit of a tease, Jamie. Which, speaking of which, I saw something on Twitter that you were teasing about a soap actor who left a show has been rehired. Care to share anymore?
No, I'm
See,
not.
See, what is this? I do declare you are a bit of a tease.
Now, people can infer what they want, but I'm not going to ruin a storyline that I think is going to be really juicy and fun. But yeah, that was just a teaser.
Meanwhile, you're being misquoted by the French.
Yes, I am. The French say that I say, you know, are saying that, you know, that I've given, you know, yeah, there's some French publication that's like, entrevue, blah, 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 blah. Daytime Confidential's Jamie Giddens, and I'm like, and then I put it on Facebook because I'm like, I can't read French. What is this saying? And it's saying that I'm, you know, that I said Jason Shane Scott or Jason Gerhard are both up for the new Adam on The Young and the Restless. So I'm like, no, I didn't. What is this? And so So I'm like, oh my God, I'm being misquoted in French publications. But you know, The Young and the Restless is really popular in Canada. So I actually don't know if that publication is a Canadian publication or actual France. But anyway,
All you had to say was "oui, oui."
They spelled my name right. That's all, you know, that's all I ever ask. It's like, you know, because, yeah, it, you know, I mean, it's so funny how, you know, that's why I'm so over the whole soaps are dying thing, because there's a new soap blog or publication popping up every 5 minutes. It's like the only reason people thought soaps were dying is because, you know, people were short-sighted. The people who ran Procter & Gamble and Brian Franz and Ann Sweeney were short-sighted in gutting those shows, as opposed to, you know, like I'm always calling for on this podcast, I wish that the people who ran soaps had the same type of mindset that Marvel and DC have, because they never let a flop make them think that comic book franchise properties are over or dead or dying. You know, there's never any talk of that.
Until Wonder Woman,
you can have a flop Superman movie, and that doesn't stop them from doing two more. You can have a Ben Affleck as the Batman, and they're not going to end Batman. And there have been 75 Spider-Men since I was turned 30, and that was just 10 years ago. So I'm like,
birthday, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, I'm 40. 40 isn't fatal, though. Like,
hey, it's your birthday.
Actually, 10 days ago today was my.
I'm trying to be nice. Damn.
Aren't you the one who said to wish him happy 50th birthday on Twitter?
No, I didn't.
Okay, 60th. No, it was one of the two.
No, I didn't do that. I told him didn't I tell him to twerk? No, that was Ira. I told him to twerk in somebody's time.
For me, you said 50.
Yeah, you did say 50. But,
okay, I do that because Jamie likes to round up people's ages. Not rounded up my age. He is not allowed to tell.
Yeah, if you're like 27 and you're not acting like I think you should be acting, you're 30 years old. It's time to stop that. Yeah,
James will say that to someone who is 25. He'll be like,
I do.
I'm like, wait a minute, you're not.
Get it together. You're 30 years old. If you're 24 acting crazy, I'm gonna say that. So yeah, but no, back to what were we talking about? This feels like we're on The View now. What was the subject at hand?
This is a surreal moment, not quite as surreal as I had watching soaps this last week, Mike. I was watching soaps this last week, and it wasn't deja vu because it had never happened before, but it was like this Twilight Zone moment. All of a sudden, Abby, a character who I have not liked in any incarnation, is really compelling. Meanwhile, on The Young and the Restless, and I should clarify, Abby on Days. Meanwhile, on The Young and the Restless, Kane and Victoria are like just bitching the hell out of each other, and it was amazing. I'm like, I need 6 months of these two just spitting insults at each other, and then like a really intense, like, on the boardroom sex scene. And then we're over at General Hospital and Sam McCall is kicking Sonny in a pit. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I couldn't believe it. What did you think of soaps this last week? Take your pick on where to start, Mike.
Lord of the World. Mike, I hope you studied for your SAT.
Which is why I said take your pick on where to start.
A multi-part. Look, I hope you had your orange juice. You have your number two pencils.
Yo,
Forget
the SAT. That was an LSAT multi-part question. Okay.
It was not. If a train leaves at this time, whatever. But Mike, it was a Twilight Zone.
If you ever got a job writing those type of, every child in America would be left behind. It would be worse.
Every child in America.
I am reclaiming my time. I am reclaiming my time, so that I can get back to Mike. I am reclaiming my time.
You've been a Democrat 5 minutes.
I am not a Democrat. I am not a Democrat. I'm an independent. But I am reclaiming my time. Mike, what stuck out for you this last week in the world of soaps?
I would have to say Sam in her leather jacket and her high heels giving a roundhouse kick to Sonny into the pit. That was worth watching General Hospital for the entire week.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And I think it was like, here's the thing, and I'm going to have to like clarify. I get the Sonny hate, and I also get that Jamie and Jillian have the Sonny love, because for me, I wasn't watching when Sonny was popular 20 years ago. So for me, just having this moment where she could actually do that was, it was cool. And I really, really like Kelly Monaco. And this storyline is giving her a chance to kind of come to life a little bit. So it was good fun. There was a lot of good soapy fun this week.
Jamie, I watched those scenes, and then I was reading Gene Passanante's tweet about Chris Van Etten becoming the co-head, and I'm like, I don't know the timing of this, but if he had anything to do with it, boy, that is quite the introduction. What did you think of it?
He's been this is the thing about what people have to do, or what they about. Yeah, I've broken this down before, but Chris Van Etten has been one of their breakdown writers. So breakdown writers do assist with the laying out and the breaking down of the storylines that the head writers write. The head writers write a long story, but they also write a thrust. Oh, and the thrust is the weekly projection of stories. And yes, there is a breakdown conference where the head writers meet with, and this is now some shows do it differently. But yeah, in theory, the breakdown writer has more to do with storytelling. That's why whenever people are attacking a script writer, you're like, you're attacking the person that really only just plugs in dialogue. Not plugs in. I don't want to make it like it's not an art form too. But, the script writers in prime time, the script writers write both the outline and the script. But in daytime, because you have to put out 260 episodes a year, there is a functioning role of someone who just writes the outline, but they also help with the storytelling more so than the script writer. So that's the whole thing about the, sometimes I see fans go way too deep in the weeds with what someone might have done or what, the head writer is where the buck stops. And then also like with the script editor, Elizabeth Corte. So, Chris has been a breakdown writer there for years. I think there's some Dan O'Connor also has been there for years. They were both there under the Ron Carlovati years. I've been the Lone Ranger that's been sort of okay with GH the last 6 months, so I'm okay with them promoting within. I kind of feel like when these shows really mess up in the last 5 years, I mean, we always tend to want outside people or someone from the past, but I'm sort of learning that it's a be careful what you wish for type scenario, because I still end up frustrated when I wanted someone from the past to come back to these shows a lot of the times, and they come back and then I'm like, that's not what I wanted. But anyway, so yeah, I'm happy that they're promoting from within. What I gather, it's not going to be a situation like Gene and Shelley. Shelley and Chris Van Etten aren't going to be Crelly or Shiss, or Shelley.
No, don't do that.
Maybe Shice, but not Shiss.
No, Shelley is the head writer, and Chris is a co-head writer, which that's a different, it's a different, so Shelley's not a co-head writer, if that makes sense. Shelley's still the boss, but, Chris Van Etten, according to Gene's, has been promoted, but Shelley is still the lead storyteller. They won't be equals like Gene and Shelley were. I'm okay with a lot. What I hope to see change for me with GH is dramatic payouts, because I've gotten engaged with a lot of their stories of late. We've talked about this. I know everybody else doesn't always feel that way, but where I feel like they mess up is dramatic payout. It's like you have something that is pretty intriguing, like the Chimera, and then nobody gets hurt with the Chimera. And I'm like, well, what was the whole point of all this? And then you have, you know, Sam has been, you know, Kelly Monaco has been incredible during this story.
Yes, she has.
If she doesn't get an Emmy nomination, it will be a shame. But, you know, on any other show, this would have been 6 months. Why is she already diagnosed and in the hospital? You know, if this was 90s Days of Our Lives, she would have been wreaking havoc for 6 months with the cat poop running through her system. But, you know, she's already in the hospital strapped to a bed. It's like, come on, no. You know, she has to get to Princess Gita levels of cat poop, you know, crazy.
Oh, my God. Yes, the fact chicken. That you're talking about this woman having cat shit disease. I'm like, oh,
well,
my.
And that's the thing that's the other thing that maybe this new team dynamic can reach out. Because in Soap Opera Digest, Shelley Altman said, you know, we didn't know what Sam had when we first started writing the story. That's how we.
Girl! Who is running?
Well, and then she said something to the effect of, that's how we start a lot of the time. And then we Googled and we found a disease that would. And I'm like,
you think you're saying that? Do you really think you
It's like, why?
This is why I go hard on them. She says shit like this, and you think you sound cute. Now,
I don't think she sounds cute. I think it's just that is her process. That they, you know, some writers do that. I kind of go with the whole art of drama book. That's like, you must come up with your theme at the top of your story. If you don't know your, it says in the art of drama, if you don't know your theme, then your plots are going to meander.
That's why a lot of fans were pointing out that Sam has already had encephalitis. And toxoplasmosis, for what she's going through, is a big stretch right now.
Well, and the other thing is, toxoplasmosis is something that usually happens if you have a pet cat. It's not, you know, falling off a bridge into, well, I guess, cat poopy water gave Sam the cat poop powers.
But even that, even her reaction right now is so rare to have a brain thing.
Yeah, and
that's soapy. I get it. Soaps go to this.
I mean, look, Lord knows, I'm a Days fan, and you know, Princess Gita was, you know, a microchip.
John had a brain chip.
But I just, it's like. Yeah, that's something I wish that they would do better instead of and then admitting it, you know, like we didn't know what Sam really had when we decided to make her. Well, maybe you should figure that out at first.
Cop to it.
It's like, come on, figure that out first.
Keep that little titty to yourself.
No, exactly.
If you wanted
to do a story about cat poop making someone go crazy, then Jason should have bought Sam a cat while she was pregnant. You know, instead of just, and then it's been so long.
It would have made more sense if it had been dragon poop.
Plus, it's been so long since she fell off that bridge. So the cat poop has just been racing through her system, causing her to go crazy for months. That's the kind of stuff that I do hope gets better. Like, you know, they need to know. You know, sit down and write out. I don't know how it works at GH, but because of my little brief time of, you know, being sort of courted by the Young and the Restless, I was privy to, you know, that's what I'll say. Say what people will about the Young and the Restless, but they have to turn in three-act, you know, beginning, middle, end, long stories over there. And, you know, or they did, you know, I don't know if that's still the case now, but they did a few years ago. It's like, I don't get this whole, well, we really didn't know what it was going to be.
And Tracy was a woman that had some brain disorder thing. I mean, it's just not very original. But other than that, Kelly Monaco is doing the do.
That was so much more realistic to me because the term is, you know, Tracy's a wealthy woman. So, you know, she probably would be somewhere in foreign country sampling exotic cuisine, you know, but it's more plausible is what I'm saying. But it's not really that plausible that Sam doesn't have a pet cat And somehow, while she was giving birth to baby Scout under the bridge with all her clothes on, because if you remember, Sam, like, that baby appeared from osmosis because her clothes were still on, you know. And but somehow she got the cat poop, and the cat poop stayed in her system for 3 months. That's when they make me go, okay, I'm not going to be able to defend y'all on this podcast with my co-host next week, because of all the things. I'll tell you, a primetime writer friend who loves this show and I were talking, and, you know, because I spoiled it to her for a while back. She's like, what's wrong with Sam? And I was like, child, she got some cat poop in her, and it's made her go crazy. And she wrote me back. She's like, so do they hate Kelly Monaco? And I'm like, no, this is equal opportunity. And she was like, in primetime, we do that to people we hate. And it's like, no, they don't hate her. They don't hate her. That's just their storytelling. So I do wish, hopefully that'll get better. Like, it'll be, just get a subscription to JAMA or New England Journal of Medicine. And
or just shut up and say you don't give us.
Yeah, don't admit it.
Don't
admit it. Because, you know, Brad Who Bell said in the press room that he makes up Bone of the Beautiful in the shower. But Brad is also...
And Gene and Shelley have also admitted stuff like that in previous interviews, too,
but
though.
Gene is like, let me tell y'all something. I'm about to put on my Snuggies and my, you know... I ain't thinking about y'all no more. And I say jolly good show, Gene. Gene, I know that there's a lot of Gene hate, but I feel like Gene has had to be the sane voice in the room for some of the great writers of the last decade and a half, Ron Carlovati, Hogan Sheffer. She probably kept them from taking characters straight to the moon. And you know, I loved both of their eras, but Gene was the one there being like, okay, let's, you know, calm it down a little. Let's have some romance. Let's have some this and that. So I think that what we loved about Ron's writing, what we loved about Hogan's writing, I think Gene was an unsung hero in a lot of that. You know, I've not been that much of a fan of Jean as a storyteller, as a lead storyteller in her own right, but I do think that her role has been very valued, and Godspeed, and I know she is now going to spend her twilight years going after Donald Trump on the Twitter. So.
Jillian?
She'll reboot Capitol, so there you go.
Jillian, what did you think of Sam kicking Sonny in the pit and then him being stuck there?
I thought it was kind of ironic, you know, that he brought, you know, he was in that, he had that dude in that pit and he's in the pit and Sam was a ride or die and Sam still got him in the pit. It's like Sonny's chickens have come home to roost, sort of, kind of, but we all know it's Sam got cat scratch fever. So... I can't talk about this show because it'll just make me mad. Like, they don't hate Kelly Monaco, so what the hell do you do to people that you do hate? Because that is just, like, the stupidest storyline. And then for this woman to go on record, we didn't know what we were gonna do. You think that shit sound cute, man? You think that sound cute? You sound stupid. Like,
And it also makes you concerned about whether or not they have a plan for Steve Burton's return.
You're also,
I mean, when you're admitting you can't figure it out.
And when you're showing that you're lazy. That's not cute. That's not quirky. That's not funny. That's not avant-garde. That's not, oh, they're thinking on their feet. That's showing that you're lazy. Get it together. It could have been so much other things that you had Sam going through. I'm like, good God, from Zion. But let's talk about Spencer. Spencer, they got my Spencer a little.
He is everything.
They had a
him
little,
and Laura.
That okay. That was a little cheesy when he was like, you killed my father, prepare to die. I'm like, with Ron, that would have had a little bit of panache. That was just like something you could just tell someone wanted comic relief and flung that sucker in there. I'm like, good God. Like, to me, soaps were so good, and then this came along. I'm like, good gravy.
See, I'm enjoying Spencer's storyline because he's providing a lot of humor for me. It's not a kidnapping story where he's, like, tied up and under huge amounts of duress. But at the same time, while he's maybe not enduring what we would see from a normal kidnapping story, Grandma Laura is going off. And I am loving Laura as protective grandma.
That's not what I was saying. I'm enjoying Spencer, but I said that little line. I'm like, Ron would have finessed that with some panache to make it a little, to make it fit in there. They just slung it in there. I was not feeling GH this week. I'm sorry. Other soaps were just a little foil.
Okay. Jamie, what are you thinking of the kidnapping storyline?
I think that little boy should get the Heather Locklear special guest star treatment next year when he comes back. It should be, I want it to be the old pink opening, and at the very end, it's with special guest, special guest star, Nicholas McNeil. He slays. He slays, Jay Bernard Jones was talking about him and said, doesn't he remind you of a young Mason Capwell on Santa Barbara? And Lord, I was like, he gives me Mason, he gives me Gina, he gives me Erica Kane. He really gives me Erica Kane. I'm not going to lie. He just has this, 80s, 90s Erica Kane that just thought, not the wimpy, crying victim Erica Kane that they turned her into near the end of the show, but back when Erica Kane was like, I am Erica Kane. I know everything about Glow. I wrote the book. That's who he gives me, I am Spencer Cassidyne, and y'all will bow down. You will give me back everything I want. And Laura, I'll tell you, it's, look. So, Spencer's, the character of Spencer is not a gay little boy. And I mean, he loves Brooklyn. They've established that. But I just have to say, having been a gay little boy with a grandmother who was always exasperated by his histrionics and shenanigans, I love that story because it's like, oh my God, that's what Thelma had to go through with me. Because Laura is just beside herself trying to keep up with this little boy, and he is so fabulous, and he does not care about, staying in a child's place, as they would say in the South.
Yeah.
Staying out of grown folks' business. He is like, it is my business. I am a Cassidyne. And he lives his life to the fullest. I love that little character. And yes. And I think, we didn't get to mention this last week, but I want to give a shout out to the show for doing such a good job of, in my opinion, bringing back Carly Schroeder as Serena and paying homage to Lee Baldwin. The actor passed away, and, a lot of shows, The Young and the Restless didn't do anything when Brock Reynolds died, or Colonel Douglas. And so I just would like to give them that shout out. I feel like the, General Hospital, there are definitely a lot of problems. There's a lot of problems with all the four shows in daytime. But I feel like, and in fact, one of the readers asked me, sometimes, and I know I'm a gripey soap fan too, but I don't ever want the shows to be in danger of cancellation just to get what I want. And I see that spirit out there. Like, this fan was asking me on Twitter, Jamie, isn't GH going to be canceled? And I get it, because the last 5 years has been we've been on cancellation watch. But, I relayed what I've been hearing from my reliable sources, which is that, no, ABC is very happy with GH right now. Rebecca, who I can never remember her last name. See, that's the type
Buttig.
Of executive.
Not buddy.
No, oh. That's the type of executive I like. That you stay so under the radar, I don't even have to know your name. But Rebecca... is fighting for the show. She's like, it's not like the Brian Franz days where it's like, yeah, let's go ahead and just do the chew and the boo, the boo, boo, boo. But no, I mean, the execs there, and it's like that frustrated that fan. And I get it, because in the last 5 years, when a show was on cancellation watch, we tended to get a bunch of stories that the fans liked, a bunch of fan returns and things like that. But so it was this level of frustration that I got. Well, they're happy with the show. I'm like, do you want them to be unhappy with the show? Do you want them to? I mean, I know you're mad at it, but do you want it canceled? It's not in cancellation trouble. ABC has bigger fish to fry. They have to make this new America's Idol or whatever it's called, American Idol. They have to make that a thing. They have to figure out the logistics of flying Seacrest back and forth there. You know, they have to figure out.
No. He's in New York with Kelly. Wait. Hold up. Are they doing Idol in L.A.?
Yeah, they're doing Idol in L.A.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So they have to, they have to stabilize. You know, there's still the carnage left from the Kelly Ripa versus GMA thing. They have to get that back together. And so all things considered, this is...
They got to also find a moderator since Whoopi is deucing.
Yeah, the executives at ABC are happy with GH. But that's what I said, that it was like a swarm. Why are they happy? I'm like, look, I know you're not happy with the show, but you want the executives to be happy. Because when they're not happy, they don't always say, we're giving you time to fix it. They just say... let's develop Tori Spelling in, romper room for daytime. It's like, no, come on, man. I mean, and the thing of it is, and I'm, Lord knows I'm guilty of this, and I'm noticing it more and more the longer I do this podcast, but a lot of it is nostalgia. It's hindsight being 2020. It's, oh my God, wasn't it so great when I was a little boy and I'm eating, Pop-Tarts in my grandma's kitchen. But then when I go back and watch the shows, which I've been doing a lot of that lately, and I do, the 80s were a great time for soaps, but I watched an old episode of My Beloved Santa Barbara the other night before I went to bed, and it was a
second shot.
It was a great episode where CeCe Capwell and Pamela, like, Pamela duped CeCe into going into business with him. Like, he knew he had a silent partner, but he didn't know. And then he shows up, and there's Marge to say, I'm your silent partner. And Jed Allen is like, you despicable, you dirty rat. And it causes all kind of drama because CeCe's daughter, Kelly, Robin Wright, was newly married to Pamela's son, Jeffrey. But Kelly was upset because CeCe slept with Pamela, and that drove away her mother, Sophia. So there was all this drama, and all the Capwell kids were like, we're not going to have any part of this. We're quitting Capwell Enterprises. And then Jeffrey quit Pamela's company. So there was all this great drama. But then they kept cutting to this storyline with Kane, the guy who held Eden captive in the woods for a while, and his girlfriend Andrea, and they were all talking about how the Capwells were going to displace the animals with this new development, and it was so wrong, and they have to save the animals. And every time they got to that, I was like, oh my God, would these people stop talking about the animals? They even had a goat. They saved a goat, and I was like, okay, so we remember things through this lens of, oh, it was
selective
all
memory.
Great. But then it wasn't all great. Even, when I loved GH back in the day, there was still that awful Chloe girl, that Chloe, what was her name? The one that Quartermain cousin was a
I thought you liked her. I thought you
No,
liked
that's
her.
Me. That's me. I like Chloe. Liked her.
And then there was, there was, remember Angel Boris?
I like Chloe Envy.
There was all, oh God, you liked B. Okay, anyway, there were always these eras of these shows that were, like, if there was Twitter, you could have logged on and been like, I know during my beloved Another World years, like, I would have been logging on, acting crazy on Twitter anytime they showed Jess, Matt and Josie by themselves. Because I didn't, that's what I like. And that's another, that speaks to another thing that soap execs never get. They think that people watch, that teens want to watch teens. I was a teen and I hated the whole Matt and Josie story. Unless it involved Charlene going over to Ho-Check Rachel. That's when I liked it because I wanted to, as a teenager, I wanted to see what Rachel was doing and Vicky. I didn't want to see what them teens were doing by themselves. And that's something that I don't think, YNR is kind of struggling with that because those
they have to integrate the teens. In order to get people to be introduced to teens, back in the day, if you're going by the template, you had to integrate the teens with the adults and then slowly transition them out.
Yeah, that's why, someone asked me that. Yeah, a fan asked me. It was like, you didn't like Matt and Amanda? And all, and I'm like, I loved Matt and Amanda because Rachel loved Matt and Amanda. But, you know, and Amanda had a better young adult storyline with Sam. But no, Matt and Josie were a bust. I never thought, you know, my the first time Matt had a good romance with, to me, was when he was with Jenna, Felicia's daughter, and Dean, you know, snatched that away from him. But yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, a lot of the things that execs think will like, or that young people, oh, this will get young people. Well, the one thing is, young people are so jaded and social media savvy that if the young people aren't ringing true, which that's a problem I feel, you know, as much as I like all three young actors on The Young and the Restless, because the dialogue is so 1980s ABC after school special, my sister and her friends who are, you know, my sister's 20 now, so she's no longer a teenager, but they're not going to tune it. You know, you're not going to get the people who are watching 13 Reasons Why or even the CW by having Reed and, you know, Charlie have these, Brahim, yo, man, why are you knocking my pop over again? It's like, okay, the first time Charlie knocked over his drink or whatever at the athletic club was, it's like, but if that's all they're going to do, come on. There's a lot of really hot, YA is like driving fiction these days. I mean, come on, Luke, all those books Luke likes, the Hunger Games and all of that stuff. You got to make young people sound
like
the
Hungry Games.
You got to make young people sound like they sound. They can't, well, the young people on YNR talk like,
are painful.
Talk like old people think young people sound. Stop it, bro! What are you doing? Why'd you knock my
and
drink
the
over,
worst
bro?
Is Victoria's son. Victoria's son
and
is
then
just
the other
the worst.
One is like, stay away from Maddie, man! Yo, bro! And it's like, okay, this is no Matt Clark versus Nick. This is no JT versus Billy. It's like, it really feels like someone who hasn't talked to a teenager in 20 years is writing that. And, you know, you got it. And it's not that hard. Just go to Barnes & Noble, walk down the YA aisle, and put four or five of them. Look, expense it to Sony. Go, you know, go ahead and put 13 Reasons Why and the Hunger Games.
And think they got
an don't imprint. And don't do the fantasy adventure. Do the real life ones.
They have an imprint, like, they're in bed with a publishing house, so they can
it's
do
like,
it. So whatever.
Read a book about young people and find, or go talk to go to a coffee house and listen to teenagers. They don't sound like that anymore. It's like,
well, let's talk about them, their parents' child, because
yes,
Jack versus Victoria. Ladies and gentlemen, if you did not know what pee control was, Victoria Newman showed Jack P control, baby! I screamed! Oh, Jamie and I was talking about this, and I'm like, that was P control! When she told Jack, look, I'm gonna tell my mother! Jack just had this look like, doh! And was like, sorry, Kane, can't do it, old boy. That is P control. Like, Jack was like, I can't stick it to Billy, but I am going to stick it to Nicky.
And
sorry, that was good shit! That was good shit.
That was hot. That was
and
hot.
Then
that
and, was. And it led to Kanan versus Victoria, and they were hot. Mike,
well, no,
I couldn't believe it. Those are two characters that
I have not liked. Okay, you keep no. That's not hot. That it, the Kanan and Victoria happened before that.
No, I know. I'm specifically referring to the scenes in the office after she had talked to Jack, in which he called her, Victoria, a raving bitch.
Yeah,
that's what I'm referring
to.
Okay,
so
I was like,
that's what I'm referring to, because she was sticking it to him, and he called her a raving bitch. Mike, I don't like Kane or Victoria either very much, but I was loving those scenes. What did you think?
Okay, what I was going to say was, to Jillian's comment, was that that's the second time Victoria has beaten Jack at his own game. So it's Victoria 2, Jack 0. I thought YNR as a whole was better this week than, you know, there are some things that I don't like, but for overall I'm pretty happy with it. I liked that Kane is just like getting desperate right now. he like Stone Cold Bitch was waiting for Victoria to just give him a smack, but she reserved herself, but she knew she won that battle. And
she's a Newman, baby. She said, "I'm a Newman, bitch. You better ask somebody."
Victoria, look, I have to pull a mic here. You know how Mike is always talking about the legalities of something? Well, Mike, look.
Yeah, say it. You got
I was thinking like you, because he could sue Victoria. Because when you fire somebody, you're not allowed to disparage them from another job. So, since Mike is always talking about
the legalities of something, Shane
could sue her. Because she has no right to do that. She can't legally do that. If you call a former employee, look, as someone who has left a colorful streak in his early career, I had to find that out early. So if they call my old boss, all they can say is, you worked there. I'm like, yes, queen! But anyway, so she broke the law by going up there and telling Jack not to hire that man. But anyway.
Yeah, but I would, you know.
And the thing of it is, if he had a non-compete, it would have been because she fired him. You can't keep the non-compete in play if you fire somebody, usually. Oh my God, I just turned into a
mic. No. If you have a non-compete.
It's okay, Jamie. Welcome to the light side.
But it was that was some good shit. And then, you know what made me mad? I'm like,
legal mic.
You know what made me mad? I was like, okay, are y'all trying to say Victoria is acting ball busting? Because right after she told Jack, look, bitch, you ain't going to get them draws if you go against me, she faints in the elevator. I'm like, are y'all trying to say this is a brain thing? Y'all better not, because this girl is her father's child. That's why whenever she falls out with Victor, he don't give a. He's like, oh, you're like your mother. So,
well,
you know,
and Jack just assuming, well, yes, our conversation is why she fainted. Why would that's so sexist? First of all, why would the woman have to faint after a strong business conversation? That's so like, does she need smelling salts? Does she need Uncle Peter? I mean, it's like, what the heck, you know? And on the thing of it is, it's like, Y&R is having more medical maladies at the same time for the Newmans than General Hospital. Maybe let's just hope it's not cat poop over there. But it's like, revisited Nikki's MS, which MS is a chronic disorder, and I applaud Sally for, because that's the thing. I know I've been a little hard on Y&R.
Yeah, forgetting it. Yeah,
this is the most realistic portrayal of MS.
She got it.
Done since they brought Nick. I mean, since they gave Nikki that diagnosis. But why give Victoria a medical malady on the heels of Nikki's medical malady? And why can't Victoria just be strong? Why can't she just be a ball buster? Why, you know, I would have hated Jackie Collins's novels if Lucky was fainting all the time or couldn't deal, or if there was ever one line of dialogue where Lucky was like, I don't know how I'm going to balance running the mob and taking care of Bobby, my little boy. Men don't care about that type of shit. J.R. Ewing never—he was always trying to snatch custody of John Ross from his mama, and it never made him say, "I don't know how I'm gonna deal with OPEC next week if I'ma have custody of John Ross." Why do we have to have this? You know, Alexis Carrington had 40 children on Dynasty. Now, yes, she did abandon most of them, but she did double. You know, Erica Kane had Bianca, you know, which she lost custody of her. But I'm just saying, you know, you ain't got it. Victoria can't afford a nanny. I get so sick of this, you know, and it started with Maria. I just keep waiting for it to stop, though. I don't know, Billy, can you go relieve Hannah? Because who cares about those children? Nikki Newman didn't even work, and it was never. When she was at the Colonnade Room,
tear it up. She
was not talking about, okay, I got to go because Hannah was going to leave. Hannah wasn't going nowhere because it wasn't no Hannah. It was Miguel. He was living in hell because they had it like that. Now, the Newmans were only supposed to be millionaires back then. They billionaires now. She ain't got to worry about no Hannah. Get you an au pair, Victoria Newman. You got $500 million. Get you a live-in hell.
I don't,
get you some live.
Like,
Get you some live-in help. Get you a grandmama from Sweden, though. Don't get no young live-in help.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, folk like to mess with the au pairs and the wealthy society. So you don't want them to come over there sniffing after the au pair. So I get you like some Swedish grandmama about 60 years old to take care of Katie and Johnny and Spoopy and all the rest of them. And
yeah, Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and Mike. Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Brash and Sassy. And also, get some employees at Brash and Sassy, because Brash and Sassy used to be treated like a, you know, major cosmetics brand. Now it feels like there were four, y'all had four employees. And so because Kane is gone, Y'all got to run Brash and Sassy out the Jabot basement by yourself.
They need to go back into an office. They need to move them out of Jabot. Now, that was cute before. No, it wasn't cute. It's stupid before and it's stupid now. They need to move out of Jabot's office.
It's supposed to be a great, huge, you know, of course, yeah, we don't have to see all of the employees, but I was always led to believe that these cosmetics companies were like Revlon or L'Oreal that had hundreds of people working for them. So all this dialogue, I don't know how, it's just going to be you and I working all night long because, what? So yeah, this is a mom and pop cosmetics brand. Y'all selling this shit late at night at 2 o'clock in the morning on an infomercial. I thought it was a major, it used to be treated like a major cosmetics brand. Sometimes I think Y&R is just writing filler. And yes, you know, I know some people are like, look, it is greatly improved in terms of characterization over the last few years. I applaud that. But it is lacking in plot. There are more elements of drama than just character. There's character.
There's a lot of things that don't make sense all the time. It's like things are going along and it makes sense, and then it takes a turn that doesn't make sense, and that just baffles me.
Now, the Kane stuff is great. Now, if they had
that shit is good.
Kane, it is. Goddard is incredible in this storyline. To me, this is the moment in Melrose Place. No drinking game, since I don't mention that one too much. But you know how boring Michael.
It's the second or third time this show.
Michael Mancini was so boring in Melrose Place before he cheated on Jane with Kimberly. And then they just, instead of doing the typical, oh, he's going to cheat, but then he's going to go back to Jane and be, you know, they're going to work it out. They tried that. But by the end of that season, it was like Jane was like, I'm done with you. You still messing with that redhead. I want a divorce. And from that point on, Michael became a son of a bitch. It's like when Jane got an inheritance from her big mama or somebody, and it said on there because when the big mama died, Jane was still married to Michael. So she put that, you know, to Mr. and Mrs., you know, Mancini, which my family would never do that. We don't care if you are married. We're just putting it in our blood's name. But he was like, I get half of your inheritance, you know, and he just became an asshole. And it made Michael Mancini go from the dud who used to collect the rent at Melrose Place to the sexiest, most delicious villain on that show. I feel that they could do that with Daniel Goddard. He is so good as an asshole. I really hope they lean into
especially with that smirk that Kane gives Victoria in that elevator when he's plotting and calculating.
Yeah, they just need to lean into this. I know that there's this precious, we can't permanently ruin Lane. That thinking right there for all these shows has to go away. It's like, kill your darlings. If they just lean into Kane being a motherfucker and have him, you know, have him and Lily have a brutal divorce and her be like, I'm keeping these kids from you. Yeah, you think so? Good luck with that, darling. And then he's going ham on her. He's, you know, going back to screwing Juliet. Maybe he marries Juliet and makes her his trophy wife with that baby. And then
he marries Juliet to get that money.
To get her settlement, yes. And then they have this War of the Roses type story. And then he becomes a full-on enemy of Victoria Newman.
But that only works if you think she's actually pregnant. I mean, do you really think she's pregnant?
Yes, why not? Well, she went to the hospital.
I don't know. You know, Mike, you be inferring stuff. Sometimes I'll be like, look, I'm going to just go with what the show has until they tell me. So I assume she got
I think she's lying. I've always thought she's been lying.
I assume the rabbit died. I don't know.
Well, she went
with her running into Victoria, it seems a little bit odd that if she was faking it,
just, but there was nobody else around. Kane didn't know she was having it done.
And
just,
she needs to sleep with that little boy. Let's
Charlie.
Just be real. It's like making a soap opera again on Desperate Housewives. Now, see, I already know the network note would be, we can't, or not, you know, we can't do that because he's a kid. On Desperate Housewives, Eva Longoria slept with Jesse Metcalf when he was in high school, and it was the hottest story. Yeah, Jesse was a grown man playing it, so I don't know. I think that guy's probably over 18. I'm not sure. But make the show soapier. Stop being so delicate and precious with everything. You know, she should have, she should be sleeping with Charlie too. You know, she should deflower.
Well, there was
Charlie.
That scene, there was some heat there.
You know, there should be, it has to be a soap opera again. You know, Ashley Abbott pulled Jack out of the bed with Diane Jenkins and made her brother get in the shower and wash Diane's cuckoo off of him. So that he could go marry.
What was her word? No, what did she say, Jamie? Tell him what she said. What did she say to Jack?
I don't even remember, child. What she said?
Did she say, wash it off, Jack?
Yeah. You know, I mean, come on now. We have to make it sexy and soapy and nasty.
Yes, they try to go that route with Mariah and Tessa. Again.
Well, see, yeah, no, to me, that's just a sweet little lesbian romance. But yeah, now where the soap could come in is, Tessa needs to go ahead and really, you know, Noah needs to fall hard for Tessa before, you know, that needs to happen first. I hope they don't play it too fast. Noah needs to fall hard for Tessa so that the payoff will be great when he walks in and sees his sister's head bobbing up and down.
Tessa's,
you know, Tessa's eyes rolling back at her head. Look, and play naughty and speak.
I mean, it's out of the left field. That's, you know, that was a soapy surprise with them. You know, I'm like,
Mariah. Then you have Sharon like, Mariah, how could you eat your brother's girlfriend's kitty cat on my couch in front of the picture casting drew for us? Oh, my God.
Okay, I'm reclaiming my time so we can go to Days.
That little Faith with her little precocious grown nosy ass walk in. I want to go see my sissy.
And scar her the way Sammy was scarred.
Except when she comes back, she'll be graduated from college.
I hope so. I hope she's that grown.
Days of Our Lives this week. Ron has been there for a week and a half. It has been drastic improvements across the board. There is so many storylines to discuss and so little time. What was the biggest thing that stood out for you?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that I always had a sense that there was some chemistry between Chad, that the whole quad with Chad, Abigail, they pushed Gabby and Dario out of the thing. And I've been waiting to feel some heat between Abigail and Chad, and I just haven't really made that connection with them. But this week, I think it's escalated a bit. And then there's the fun, the doppelganger fun, because they're just making it fun. And I think overall, Days is just, it's just enjoyable. I just feel like all these elements have been there for a really long time. That's the beauty of having a Magic TV. And they just kind of ramped up those things that were kind of in the background and made them fun.
So instead of a black and white Magic TV, it's now in color.
Exactly.
Okay. Jamie, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about Days was Patch's investigation. And it's so much fun to see Patch and Kayla together just sort of teaming up to try and figure things out. And then, you, of course, it's Tripp who is the one responsible. Does it make you feel warm and fuzzy about them the way it did me, or is it not something that you're particularly caring for?
That's a story inherited from Dina that I'm really ready to see wrap because I like Tripp, and I, you know, Lord knows Patch is the perfect example of, you know, doing a bad thing when you come to town doesn't mean you don't have viability, because he came to town as a really bad guy and, you know, was one of Victor's henchmen and terrorized Hope and Kayla until, you know, because he was mad at Bo for punching his eye out, or, you know, because Bo is the reason Patch lost his eye the first time when they were boys back in the Merchant Marine. They fell out over a lady. But anyway, so I don't want them to lose Trip through this, because to me, Trip is so much more interesting and sexy than Joey, and you know, and he can act, and you know, he's good-looking man, you know, he's got that chiseled, you know, face and everything, and these other things are chiseled. So, you know, I think Days needs somebody in that young, you know, area that can act, really, and this kid can really act, and I would like to kind of see him be like a Kendall Hart or a Jonathan from God in Light, that, yeah, he still has all these issues with Patch and Kayla, but they'd be able to figure out how to keep him and, you know, kind of make him more family, but keep him as a bad boy. We got to get him a woman, because that little Jade is you know, abysmal. She is horrendous. She is awful.
She's gone.
So she must Joey. Go. So she, is Joey.
I don't want Joey to die, because he's core and I love Joey, but I'm okay with Joey being recast. But Jade, I'm waiting for the Friday tag when Marlena turns back into a panther cat, and I hope she eats Jade whole. Because
I don't know how Ron didn't come in and look at the teen cast that he has to work with, and for the majority of them, his eye just started twitching.
Well,
I have to say that, like, Claire and Theo have improved immensely for me.
You a lie. Theo improved, not that gal. You a lie.
No,
Theo has improved.
You a lie.
And I like how they're...
Theo
like
has kind of become using... Spinelli. Claire, yeah. I like
but
Marlena
I like how they're
Claire,
using
but...
him as the go-between between Abe and the Damaris. I like that.
If I had my druthers, they'd redo the entire teen cast except
well,
Theo.
Abe really needs to just go over there and check Abby and all the Damaris, because you're not going to use Lexi.
I love that. I love Theo and that. I was like, gosh, I'm like, come on.
You're not going to use Lex. They're going to get Lex and Poe, baby, sent to prison with all this hacking and stuff.
That's what he did when he went over there and was confronting Chad and Tony. I mean, he was
Andre,
checking them at least.
I know. I do the same thing, because you know, sometimes I call him
I
Tony
hate to
Andre,
say this, but can they just kill that character off so I don't have to worry about it anymore?
No, I want them to bring him back as Tony. You know, it could. You know, they could do like the two Beckys on Roseanne. Kate could be like, I ran a DNA test on you. You're Tony, not Andre. Yes, I've just been pretending to be Andre. Ha ha ha. And we don't
and
even have
then
to
then Anna
just,
would come back.
Yeah, everybody just
and then
Tony.
Anna comes back.
Yeah. No, I like Andre and Kate, because Andre straight up said, I will mark Abe to get that damn last.
Well, see, this is my problem with Andre. I have to look, you know. You know how GH fans can never kind of get over what Franco did?
Yeah.
That's me with Andre, because Andre didn't have a tumor in his head. Andre was a stone-cold serial killer. Andre murked up a whole lot of folks in Salem in the 80s, and now he's a corporate suit for Damara Enterprises. I'm like, Ted Bundy can't go be on the board of Microsoft. You know, that's my thing with Andre. It's like...
Including Renee, is that right?
Renee.
I read that on Twitter. People are like, I love Andre, but I can't get behind Andre because,
Renee.
Yeah, he's always going to be the person. He's always going to be the person that killed Renee. Yeah.
Renee. Who that? I don't know who that is. I don't know.
Jillian,
Renee
who
was
is? Yeah, only, I only know it from Soap Digest when I was reading it.
Okay, hold on.
She was Stefano's bitch goddess daughter, played by Felice Sampler. And Renee was, in my opinion, I know Tony and Anna fans might disagree, but Renee was the love of Tony's life. And I know what you're wondering, wait, but wasn't Tony Stefano's son? So they did a storyline back in the Gap that revealed that Daphne, Tony's mama, had an affair on Stefano. And so Tony wasn't Stefano's child. So he and Renee were able to be able to screw and stuff. And then Andre, who was his cousin back then, Andre was not his brother back then. Andre was his cousin. And he, you know, Stefano had him have plastic. He didn't even look like Tony naturally. He had plastic surgery to look like Tony. And then he started murking up people with Tony's face. And Renee was one of the people he killed. And so it's just gotten so convoluted over the years because they made Andre Stefano's child. And I'm like, but wait. And then somebody even said when they did that retcon, well, that explains the resemblance to Tony. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. He had plastic surgery back in the day. But anyway, Tony, basically, whenever Tony, you know, Tony was always the good Demera. I was telling Jillian this the other day. Tony used to run the rec center. I mean, Tony was, you know, in the 80s, he was the, what do you call it? Well, you know, from The Godfather, the one who wanted to make the family good and stuff. But then he got sucked in. He was like
Tom Hayden? Michael?
No, not Tom Hayden. Michael. You know, he was like the good son. But then in the 90s, when Riley got a hold of him, and because of his anger at John Black for stupping Kristen, he went crazy. But then they did all these, you know, oh no, that was always Andre. That wasn't Tony. And so you just, you know, I just call him Tony Andre now because I really don't know who did what. There are fans out there who do know, because like, I'll be like, didn't Andre do X, Y, Z? No, Jamie, that was Tony. Didn't Tony? I'm like, well, shit, I don't know. Because, I mean, they didn't really keep a good track of those kids. And you know, I guess it was just like when they decided to bring Teo back the last time, they looked at it and was like, okay, well, Tony died during the whole Kiriakis Demera feud, so instead of doing another back from the dead, we'll just say that this is Andre. But it's like, Tony is the money shot. He's the one who had the great romance with Anna. He's the dashing Tony Demera. But they really are writing Andre like
Tony.
Basically, he's Tony, but he's a murderous Tony. So, yeah.
Jillian, what I want to know is, who is Dario working with?
Jesus.
But Abe made me so mad. I'm like, Abe, shut your dark and lovely ass up, man. I'm like, let's feel that damn picture.
Why you got to be dark and lovely?
Because I noticed the rich that he wearing. Your hair ain't darker than mine, and you 50 years older than me.
I ain't mad at Abe. I'm going to do the same thing. I got friends going full gray.
Can John use some dark and lovely?
No. John is green as a silver fox. Yes,
he is.
John.
About time.
Dario, at first I wondered, I'm like, is Dario working with Andre? And then I'm like, no, Andre wouldn't do that. I'm like, I'm just so confused. And I'm like, is he working for a Kiriakis then? Like,
y'all know who the new big bad is in Salem.
Who?
Morgan Fairchild. No, I don't know if he works.
I'm like,
look, she the new Stefano. She got the doppelgangers going. Look, that's Stefano right there.
Okay. Dario and Abby playing chicken over that photo with Chad was delicious, though. When Dario was like, I got the phone backed up to the cloud so you can't delete it. Da-da-da-da-da. Abby's like, it's raining, bitch. Ain't no goddamn cloud. She was too tough. I am like, oh, damn.
I have to give a thumbs up to the Friday cliffhanger, too.
I hope Dario is alive at the end of this arc, because we know he's already, you know, the decision was made. He's already gone. But, I hope he's alive, because I hope Ron brings him back, because Dario is the business. I'm like, Ron Carlovati saved Dario's character for me in 2 weeks. And now I'm like, damn, he's leaving. It's like, no, I want him to stay.
Oh, he ain't shit. When he saw that car coming, and he just was like, oh, you know, he was like, you could be roadkill. I'm not.
There's so much potential there now with his brother being a cop. That is always so great. That's Cain and Abel. It's like your brother being Dudley Do-Right. And if Dario became the new big bad of Salem, like, that would be so awesome.
Yeah.
I do hope
So in other words, what you're saying is Thorne should become the big bad of Bold and the Beautiful because Ridge is the Dudley Do-Right. I'm using this as a terrible transition.
Don't do that.
Just dad and wife. But no, one thing before we go on the Dario thing, and look, nothing we suggest can happen because Days is 8 months in advance, but I hope before Dario leaves, this is my fantasy end game for him. He's like, I don't have any money to get out of the country, and I want Doug and Julie to walk in. We buying this club. Okay. And we change, and then you see the name fall down, TBD, and then you see him putting up Doug's Place. Yes!
Mike, the Bold and the Beautiful this last week. After Victor on The Young and the Restless disowning Nick, now we have Eric disowning Ridge. What'd you think?
Well, actually, I thought that I gave my moment of the week to the Kelly Monaco or Sam kicking Sonny, but this actually ranked up there too. It was a great moment. Ridge actually, this is the first time that I actually felt Torsten K was Ridge. He and John McCook had a great scene in the hotel room, and he kissed him on the forehead and then sent him on his way. It was great. However, it has to stick because if you remember, Katie had the same conversation with Brooke that she was no longer her sister, but now they get along because a couple of weeks ago, Brooke was asking about Katie's social life.
Girl, you
took my husband. Right, exactly. She didn't say anything. So as long as it sticks, it's good. But B&B and Y&R sometimes have a lot of stories that kind of parallel. And it's just like there's a lot. I mean, you have to kind of separate them mentally. But I thought that was a great, great thing. But other than other than that, B&B is circling. What it always does is when you crack the crust and open it, it just falls apart really easily. And there's a lot of things that are very repetitive and kind of silly, like Bill telling Thomas that Caroline was dying. So there's just a lot of things that aren't always as good as they seem on the outside. Like B&B has some good moments, but it's starting to fall apart. Because Eric and Sheila have been in this hotel room for like 2 weeks, and he has been in the same sweater. So,
oh, my God. No.
It's like the pot pies on Game of Thrones. You don't want to eat them after the transition from grayscale pus.
What?
Jamie.
Anyway.
He was saying a pie and the crust falling apart, and that was a nasty thing on Game of Thrones.
I think Bill telling that boy that woman was dying was soap villain genius. I don't think that was silly. Nikki Newman, Jillian's girl. Nikki Newman lied about dying to keep.
Yes,
I know, but it's 2017. I mean,
no,
come on.
Hold up.
Although
I feel
like that Bill did it on the fly, and then he just.
Thomas is an idiot, he'll believe
Bill
anything.
Bill has done that before, though.
Yeah.
They lied about someone being sick just to suit his own agenda. So he did that with Steffi so she can keep what that child name is, stupid Liam. I'm like, get out of here. It was kind of
his name is stupid Liam.
Yeah, I think that
stupid
is
Liam, just like how you got
I think
problem.
Bill is the only he is the only person in daytime that gets to be an unapologetic son of a bitch, and I relish that because if he was on GH, there would have been a note, make him nicer so we can put him with women like with Valentine, you know, so they would have made him, you know, a pussy, you know, but
pussy,
you know,
pussy,
but,
yeah,
you
no.
know, Bill is that unapologetic. Bill and Victor Newman are the only men in daytime that get to be son of bitches.
But he comes off as a caricature.
Victor Kiriakis can be sometimes.
Victor tells you, right. Victor told me to
know,
her face.
I will agree with you. They do, like, look, I don't think he's a caricature. I think, for me,
no.
I think he comes off, they try to add comedy in there. Like, his phallic obsession over that building is a little comedic. But I don't see Bill as a caricature. To me, when I think of villains who were caricatures by the end, Alan Spaulding was a caricature by the end. When he was just like, and you know, Marge Doucet could turn characters into a caricature. You know, she could. I loved her, but you know, she
you ain't gonna get no lies from me, honey.
You know, and as much as I love Mark Pinter as Grant Harrison, I feel like Grant Harrison became a caricature by the end. But I don't see Bill. I think Bill is just who Bill is every day, all day. He feels like he should be able to drink his brown liquor, smoke his cigars, screw his wife's sister, tell his boys who they should screw, and get his buildings. I think he's a caveman. I think he's a very simplistic man. He wants his red meat. He wants his cigar. He wants Brooke. He wants his boys to shut up and do what he says, and he wants his buildings. And he doesn't deviate from that unless the woman in his life is like, don't be doing that no more. And then he'll try to be better. But his innate nature is just Bill. I think they really get that character and understand that character. And I feel Steffi, in a lot of ways, is the female version of Bill. That's why it sucks that they can never be in a story together for whatever reason.
For whatever reason.
They killed it. You know, Steffi is the female version of Bill Spencer, more so than Brooke. I'm still enjoying Bold. Yes, it definitely has, you know, its problems. Yeah, you know, Mike, I feel you because, you know, Paw does look like he over there musty, like he ain't been going
in that
shit. Oh,
my God. His wife.
Sometimes I feel like they're trying to bring Steffi back to where she used to be, a little bit of a high-riding bitch, and I like that. But then they back off of it a little bit, and it just is kind of a paradox sometimes when I watch it. It's like I don't know how to take how she's supposed to be.
I agree.
Also this thing where they like, you know, Bold will do stuff on air and then be like, you didn't see it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, and that's problematic.
Like, you mean like Steffi and
like
Bill?
Yeah, like Steffi. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like those type of things inform soap opera, but you know, they can never be mentioned again sometimes on Bold. And I hate that. That's one thing that they do. It's like, especially when they're trying to set up something new, like if they're like, oh, okay, we want to put Katie with Wyatt, so let's just ignore all of the issues there. Like, the fact that she was his stepmother. And that to me is dumb because those issues is what makes it a soap opera. I mean, how many times on Guiding Light did somebody throw up in Blake's face? You slept your way through the entire Spalding family. Or, you know, with Brooke, how many times did Stephanie throw that in her face? It's like this current regime would just...
How many times was Lisa Grimaldi reminded
of all of her husbands and Erica Kane of all of her husbands? Bold seems like they would be like, nope, Erica didn't have any other husbands, just Jack, none of that happened, you didn't see it, we can train you to believe you didn't see it, and that's annoying, because, you know, like with Katie, that's why the whole time when she was preaching and moralizing at Brooke, I was rolling my eyes, because I'm like, girl, you did the same thing to Bridget, you did the same thing, Katie, you was hoeing, Bridget let you move in her house and her crib and stuff, your niece and stuff, and you hunched on her man, Katie, you was a dirty dog too. Yeah, Brooke a dirty dog, but Brooke owns it. Brooke admits she a dirty dog, and she'll tell you, I can't help it, it was destiny. But Katie is like preaching and pointing her finger in Brooke's face, and I'm like, you done hoed, Katie, you done hoed too. Quit trying to be all, you know, they do that. They try to give her these Stephanie Forrester lines. Stephanie was a prude and a frump, except that time when she passed off Massimo Moroni's baby on Eric. Lying ass, lied on Eric. Eric would have been Eric's Beth. Paul Beth Logan had to make quesadillas for rich white folks in Beverly Hills. Stuff and she had to go around. Would you like some more champagne, Mrs. Forster? Yes, bitch. We used to go to college together, and now you over here fixing me a taco. How about that, bitch? That could have been Beth Logan, but Stephanie passed that baby off on dumb Eric. Eric, oh, it's my baby. He's brown skinned and with dark hair, but he's my baby.
On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DC Confidential. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DC Confidential. You can find Mike at MPJ24.
Way, you got it. Way to go.
Fantastic. Jillian is at
it only
Jillian is at Jillian Bow. And Jamie is at Jamie underscore Giddens. As always, you can find me
I'm at Deep
Kirk.
Throat.
Keep it, keep it.
I am reclaiming my time.
And after this week, you can't ever say that again.
I'm going to be using that on a periodic basis.
I'm going to do that
until next time.
We're
so
all
going
to do it when you interrupt.
Okay.
Until next time, so long.
Bye.